This time on Weather Brains, June 1957, a time of hurricane history for the Gulf Coast.
That's one of my most fascinating storms.
The name was Audrey. It was a storm many people thought was no big deal, but they were wrong.
It brought a 12-foot storm surge to that low-lying area there around Cameron, Louisiana, and 390 people died.
J.B. Elliott remembers tropical systems from nearly 60 years ago.
I remember another hurricane coming in on the Louisiana shore in 1947.
Also coming up, trial by fire. J.B. recalls his very first day on the job for the National Weather Service back in 1957.
The very first day on duty, I walked in about 7:45, and a tornado was on the ground at that moment north of Jasper in the Red Mills community, and it killed 4 people.
And Bill Murray looks at prospects for rain in central Alabama.
Unfortunately, no widespread relief in sight.
It's all coming up. Welcome to Weather Brains, the podcast that's all about weather, put together by a bunch of weather geeks from the Weather Company in Birmingham, Alabama. I'm one of those geeks, David Black, and with me for this podcast are two more of our more prominent and notable weather geeks, Bill Murray and J.B. Elliott. Mr. Murray, how are you, sir?
Mr. Black, it couldn't be better. Tracking a few thunderstorms across east central Alabama tonight.
It sounds kind of newsworthy, the fact that you're in Birmingham and you're not on the road somewhere. What's with that?
I know, it is a little unusual. Someone said today, we sure are seeing a lot of you lately. You know, like maybe I've been on the, maybe I've been home a little bit too much.
That's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. Speaking of another good thing, J.B. Elliott. Mr. Elliott, how are you and what have you to report, sir, to us?
A little bit short on sleep, but other than that, I'm C+, doing okay, and I feel good. I'm happy.
C+?
Yes.
Okay. Well, everybody's kind of on a short staff this week because two of our Weather Brains compadres are out of the gate. They've flown the coop or all those other cliches. James Spann, chief meteorologist, ABC 3340 Birmingham, is taking a little vaccination, as they say, otherwise known as vacation. So he's nowhere to be found. And then Brian Peters is way up north. Where'd he go? Chicago? Is that right? Anybody know?
Yeah, his daughter lives in Chicago.
Okay, that's right. Rebecca's up there. So I guess they maybe went up there to spend some time and see her. So I guess we can allow both of these guys hall passes, permission, you know, for time off. But
yeah, usually, certainly, you know, David, when James tries to take vacation, we get some tropical activity. So unfortunately, that didn't happen this year.
Or we'll have something happen, a tornado outbreak or something. He's had to come back, I think, from some vacations I can think of for tornadoes and maybe hurricanes too. So this is kind of weird that this
is
all the weather's quiet. You know, the weather's quiet, but I did want to ask you two guys about something because you all are both helping watch the weather ranch in James's absence, and that is we are seeing from day to day a few thunderstorms pretty widely scattered across the state. What are the prospects for getting any of the badly needed rain around these parts? Anybody want to take a stab at that?
Well, I tell you, David, it looks like those chances are going to be going downhill over the next 3 days at least. Looks like we'll be mostly dry, you know, tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday here in central Alabama. If you looked at the afternoon runs of the models, you might think that even past Thursday we might be dry. So, unfortunately, no widespread relief in sight, despite the nice little showers we've had over the past 3 or 4 days.
So we're just not in a pattern right now to get any significant systems through, because this is, I guess, a fairly typical summer pattern, is it not?
Well, I think this trough and big upper low that's setting up over the Midwest is a little bit unusual, but it's going to keep us in a dry northwesterly flow, although sometimes you can get a disturbance, I guess, passing along in that flow that could bring in some storms. But I think you know, it's going to be unusual to see. Even though it's not really that much cooler than normal, we'll be down in the middle, maybe a few locations in the lower 60s by Wednesday morning and Thursday morning. So that's going to feel quite nice after the muggy low to mid-70s that we've been experiencing for the past few days.
Hey, that'd be a nice break from the mid-upper 90s and century mark, so I won't complain. It could be a lot hotter. Mr.
And
Elliott?
The daytime humidity will be a little bit lower, too, starting tomorrow.
Mr. Elliott, I was going to ask you, are we in any kind of shape to see any tropical activity? What's happening with all the big areas down in the areas of cloudiness down in the over Florida Peninsula?
Nothing really exciting right now. At one time today, there was a broad surface low covering much of Florida, the eastern Gulf, and the western Atlantic, but it was not much tropical characteristics to it. And I think late this afternoon it had weakened a bit, hadn't it, Bill? I haven't checked the latest, but I don't think it's much to it right now.
Yeah, nothing special.
It is going to stream a lot
afternoon.
Of moisture northward along the Atlantic seaboard, though, for the next several days. And the flood problems are enormous along the mid-Atlantic and northeast.
Wow. Washington, D.C., parts of Maryland among them, right? Really getting hit.
Absolutely.
I think some federal buildings were affected by that, so that's a big problem for those folks.
Yeah, well, I had a friend in Washington, D.C. today say, 10 inches of rain, this is ridiculous. When is it going to end? Because they say it's getting quite dreary up there in the mid-Atlantic region.
Yeah, and the opposite end of the spectrum is down here in the southeast in quite a few areas, I guess, in Alabama now. We've got all the water usage advisories in effect. And as James Spann said in a podcast a previous week here, that for it to be happening at this point in the summer, midway through June, is not a real encouraging sign. So hearing from you guys what I just heard about the weather patterns, it doesn't sound as if we have any substantial chance of rain relief in the future, so in time in the near future. So I guess we're just going to have to deal with this and perhaps continue conserving water. And that probably means, Bill, you cannot wash the extra Jaguar and the spare Lexuses that you have. You're going to have to confine your car washing, just to the BMW, okay? I wanted to make sure that you're clear on that.
We'll keep the Saturn clean over the next few days here if we can.
Okay.
I noticed in the lake level reports that Lake Purdy, our main water supply, is only about 2 feet or 2.5 feet under full pool, so that's not too bad.
Yeah, that's good news. I just hope we get through it. I'll tell you what, I'll put up with too much rain any day. I know that some people get discouraged about that and get depressed with all the rainy weather, but I just look at how much the earth and the plants and everybody benefits from rain, and I don't mind rainy days. Never have.
I'm a rainmonger.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't like it if I were in the construction business or had to work in something else outside. But
I'm already picking out those perfect locations for retirement, David. In Astoria, Oregon, where it rains about 300 days a year, that's where I'm heading.
Is that your perfect retirement spot that you have picked out?
Yeah, about 68, for the average high and a good bit of rain. I think I could enjoy that.
Well, you're not one of those snowbirds that everybody wants to head toward Florida. You're kind of different then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I love a little weather.
JB, you have a favorite spot in mind? Is it Birmingham, Alabama, Trustville, or somewhere else?
It's probably where I'm at the moment, in Trustville, but I would love to live near DeSoto State Park, or maybe up in Mentone, up on top of Lookout Mountain in extreme northeast Alabama, if it wasn't so far away from major medical facilities and so forth.
Well, that's a consideration, but you guys have some nice places in mind. I'm a mountain person myself. The mountains of East Tennessee beckon to me, and I just never get tired of going up there. Could spend a long time up there.
I don't like a congested area, so that would favor northeast Alabama.
Right.
Over East Tennessee.
Yeah, the climate's pretty good.
Yes. The cost of living is cheap.
Absolutely. Well, we don't have any weather systems of note to talk about, but Bill Murray, you have made some interesting posts on the blog at abc3340.com about this week back in, was it 1957, Hurricane Audrey, I believe?
That's exactly right, David. That's one of my most fascinating storms. It turned out to be the ninth deadliest hurricane ever to hit the United States. And, I can't even imagine a day when we didn't have satellite, imagery and all the different computer models and tools that we have today to forecast hurricanes. So it's a real study to me. Forecasters and everyone thought we really were cutting edge back in the late 50s with, how far we had come in hurricane forecasting. And then, on the night of June 24th, this tropical depression formed in the southwestern Gulf of Mexico. They found out about it because of some shrimp boats that were based out of Brownsville, Texas, that night reported some 35 to 40 mile an hour winds. And the next day they sent a Navy reconnaissance plane out there, and when it got there it found out that the storm was already a hurricane, because of course they didn't have satellite pictures to tell them what was going on.
Isn't that amazing?
And it was already a Category 1 hurricane. It slowly strengthened over the next 24 hours. And Navy reconnaissance the next day found the storm had strengthened to about 973 millibars. Still, top winds were little bit over 100 miles per hour, and they just really didn't think it was very much. And it kind of teaches you lessons. What they didn't really know in real time was that the Gulf was about 3 degrees warmer than it should have been for that time of year. And then on the night of the 26th, the hurricane just went crazy, and it dropped nearly 40 millibars. We'll never really know what the actual central pressure was at landfall just west of Cameron, Louisiana, and almost an exact analog of Hurricane Rita from this year. The hurricane struck with a central pressure somewhere between 930 and 940 millibars, and winds had increased to 150 miles an hour.
Wow.
And so it brought a 12-foot storm surge to that low-lying area there around Cameron, Louisiana, and 390 people died. 190 people were never even found. And you know, there were a lot of cries after it that the Weather Bureau had done a poor job in pinpointing it, you know, what was going to happen. And, of course, it was the state of the science in the late 1950s.
It was 1957.
Exactly. There actually was a group of people that sued the Weather Bureau, and one of the few times that's actually happened, because the advices that night, you know, basically, or through the afternoon hours on the 26th, said, you know, the storm's going to arrive tomorrow on Thursday. You'll have, you know, it didn't say you'll have the morning to prepare, but basically said, you know, the tides wouldn't arrive till later in the day. And, of course, those people went to bed thinking they would leave early on Thursday morning. When they woke up around 4 a.m., the storm surge was already some 10 or 11 miles inland and was underneath their houses. And, of course, many, many of those people perished that waited till too late to leave. So the Weather Bureau, or at least no negligence was found, and the suit was settled, in favor of the defendants, as you would expect. But there were a lot of hurt feelings and a lot of mad people in southwest Louisiana for many, many years after Hurricane Audrey.
J.B. Elliott, you're a former employee of the National Weather Service. Hurricane forecasting back in 1957. Think it was kind of tough?
It was definitely tough, and I remember the name Connor. Forecaster Connor was one of the ones that would sign the hurricane advisories, and I believe he was working during Audrey. And what year was Beulah, Bill? Was it that 1967?
Yes, that's right, J.B.
Yeah, that's the one that spawned so many tornadoes in South Texas, something like 135 tornadoes. And I remember another hurricane coming in on the Louisiana shore in 1947, because I was 3 years out of getting out of high school, and I remember sitting up until late at night listening to WWL in New Orleans as that thing got closer. And that one also struck Cameron.
Wait a minute. You were how old in 1947 now? I hate to do this, but I want to know.
Let me get my calculator here.
Let's go back to Audrey. Bill, you were talking about that about the third week or so in June of 57, right?
Right.
Wow. I know how old I was.
There's something really amazing to me, Dave. JB can comment on this. We didn't have a single, you know, hurricane center in 1957. After or beginning with the 1935 hurricane season, they actually had four hurricane warning offices: one in New Orleans, one in San Juan, one in Jacksonville, one in Boston. And so, you know, the hurricane advisories for Audrey actually came out of New Orleans, as JB just referred to. I think there were two main forecasters there, a man named Kraft and a man named Connor, and they were basically working, you know, 24/7 during these hurricanes, putting the warnings out.
Wow, totally different system. And I'm thinking too, not only would it have been just so terribly difficult to know what was going on in a real time environment, for example, the shrimp boats reporting the winds being, I guess, the main way that forecasters found out about a developing system at the time, but I also think about the computer modeling and the ability to project and predict what was going to happen. I mean, we're talking.
You also didn't have those TV reporters that would go on site and do continuous TV coverage from the point of landfall.
Yeah, James Spann has
then,
a name
almost,
for those.
Almost all black and white TV, I believe, still in 1957.
I tell you what, from a forecast perspective, it has to be the dark ages back then.
Well, I'll tell you, one piece of information was missing to the forecasters that night as the hurricane intensified rapidly. David, they didn't make a penetration into the eye that night, and if they had, there actually was a reconnaissance plane tracking the storm, but for the purposes of radar. And they did mention one thing back to the forecasters. They said, you know, that the radar presentation had become much more active, and probably if they'd put two and two together, they might have understood before 1 a.m. in the morning, because that's when they really realized that something was going to go horribly wrong. But unfortunately, that was after the 10 o'clock newscast, and that 1 a.m. advisory, I'm going to post it on the blog here a little bit later tonight, you know, began to really show the fact that they were getting concerned. But most of the people in Cameron that night didn't hear that warning. And another thing contributed, you know, Cameron, about 40 miles south of Lake Charles, and JB, you can correct me, I may be a little on or off of that, but they were getting their information from Port Arthur,
right,
and from Lake Charles, and there wasn't as much concern in those two cities because they're pretty far inland, and you know, the storm was going to take a little bit longer to get to them. And
Cameron was right on the water's edge, right, going to
exactly
take the full
right
blast
on the
beach. Of it.
I believe the only building left standing was a small concrete block structure.
It was the courthouse, JB. That's exactly right. And I've got a real cool book that some of the survivors wrote back in the 1980s. And it's full of just fascinating firsthand accounts of, you know, from people that survived the storm through that terrible morning of the 27th.
So in the next couple of days then, Bill, it sounds as if folks who like to read the blog at abc3340.com may be treated to some of the advisories that were coming out in June of 57 about Audrey. Is that right?
Yeah, I've been posting them since Friday night, David, since you know, the anniversary of the 24th, and going to continue to post those into tomorrow morning, and then a few more posts tomorrow and the next day about you know, what went wrong with Audrey.
JB, did you get that calculator out?
Yeah, I was 15 years old.
You were?
In 1947.
57.
Yeah, I was 25 years old in 1957.
What year did you start at the Weather Service?
I was talking about the year the other hurricane moved in on Cameron, I believe 1947.
Okay.
When did I start in the Weather Service?
Yeah.
1957.
Yeah, that was your year, huh?
You started at the time they were all talking about it.
Yeah, I was. I started in the spring of 1957, and the morning I came on duty at the Birmingham Airport, the very first day on duty, I walked in about a quarter to eight to start filling out employment papers and for them to take my fingerprint and everything, as they do with new government employees. And a tornado was on the ground at that moment north of Jasper in the Red Mills community, and it killed four people. So that day I did not fill out any employment papers. I was pressed into duty to answer the telephone, and it was wall to wall all day. Exciting start.
Trial by fire.
There's something else interesting, David, that I picked up on as I was, you know, researching my, you know, the storms from each year. And Audrey was not the first tropical storm of 1957. There actually was one 2 weeks before in the Gulf of Mexico, but, you know, because information was rather sparse back then, it was never classified above a tropical depression. It was only after the storm moved inland in the Florida Big Bend area that it actually was later determined that it was a tropical storm. And of course, sometimes we go back now and we say, well, a storm might have been a Category 5 instead of a 4 or something like that. But, you know, today you would never have a case probably where a storm would go unnamed because of the intense media scrutiny, as JB was referring to earlier. That Audrey, even though it was the A storm, was actually not the first tropical storm in 1957.
Well, this seems like a good time for me to drop in a listener's email that you guys might be able to talk a little bit about. This is from Matthew, and Bill, he had been reading one of your posts earlier a few weeks back on the weather blog on abc3340.com. You had made a post about Tropical Depression Number 1, and Matthew writes, he asks, what distinguishes a system as being tropical or non-tropical in nature? And then, for instance, he refers to Bill's post where Bill said, the storm will cross the Florida Peninsula and it will emerge into the Atlantic after midnight. It will actually intensify over the Atlantic, but it will be as a non-tropical system. Now, again, that was a few weeks back. Bill or JB, can you shed a little light on that for Matthew?
Well, there was one. There's one important distinction. A tropical cyclone, as opposed to an extratropical cyclone, has a warm core. Whereas, you know, the general everyday low-pressure system that we get across the continental United States and, you know, the storms that form out in the Atlantic and things like that, they have cold cores. They're colder at their center than they are at the outside. A hurricane or any tropical cyclone differs from that in that it is warmer at the center than it is at the outer edges. And that's what makes the difference. Now, what we get now, because the hurricane center for the last couple of years, they've always identified them as subtropical storms or hybrid storms. Some storms actually exhibit characteristics of both. And now they actually go ahead and name those storms because, as I probably should have said in that post that the gentleman's referring to, an extratropical storm in that case was probably going to be more dangerous than the tropical depression that had actually struck Florida, on the west coast. As it emerged into the Atlantic, it was going to become, actually a stronger storm, even though it wasn't tropical. So that difference is, not so important. I guess, that's not important if you're out in a vessel or a ship or something out there or being affected by a coastal storm. It doesn't matter whether it was tropical or extratropical. It can still pack quite a punch.
And we got another listener email, too, I thought I might throw in here. This is from Matthew, wondering if you know of any books you could recommend to learn more about meteorology and weather, as well as whether there are any particular websites that you guys would recommend for learning basics of meteorology and weather.
Well, I tell you, I've got a great one for him, Dave, and I need to get in my library here. And as a matter of fact, I may run back here to the back for a second, because I did see that email, and I meant to get ready for that question, but I can answer it in just a second.
There are so many websites out there for data, but I guess when it gets down to sites that do a good job of explaining observation techniques, computer models, how forecasting is done, ABC 3340's weather section on their website has some links, I know, to help explain how some of the models work. And JB, you know that stuff like the back of your hand, but for folks who are probably just touching at it for the first time, that might be a good basic primer to start out with.
I think one of the graduate students over at Mississippi State University posted a link, and I do not have that link right now, that is a good dictionary or encyclopedia of some of the main weather terms or weather items that we talk about. And the University of Illinois has an educational section in their meteorology link that's real good, where you can click on various subjects. And I do not have that link available right now, but I believe he could go to Google and type in
just find the
University of Illinois weather and maybe get it.
And there's a meteorologist, David, named Jeff, and I may have the pronunciation wrong. It's either Haby or Hobby, H-A-B-Y. And JB, you may have seen his website, which probably has hundreds of topics on it.
Yeah, that's the one I was just talking about. I couldn't think of his name.
Okay, good. Yeah, it's called Haby Hints, I think, H-A-B-Y-H-I-N-T-S, probably .com. I'll look it up in just a second. But I tell you, the book that I really like is Meteorology Today. It's by C. Donald Ahrens, A-H-R-E-N-S. It's an introduction to weather, climate, and the environment. It's in its seventh edition now, but you can pick it up on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, and a lot of times you can even get it used. And I tell you what, it's a superb textbook.
Okay,
and
good deal.
I think that a lot of folks that have more than just a passing interest in meteorology would love to pick that up, and it explains it in understandable terms. And, I think it's a great book.
I've got a nice one, too. It's called Meteorology, Understanding the Atmosphere. And it was written, co-authored by John Knox from Huffman, went to Huffman High School. And he's over at the University of Georgia right now, and he was a co-author.
I bet he's listening to this podcast
before this is over with. Debbie, what do you think? He is an excellent writer, both of those guys. Stephen Ackerman and John Knox co-authored it. And it is very clearly written with great illustrations. And it's a college-level textbook for college students studying meteorology, but it's easy to understand.
Good deal. Well, maybe we've helped some of the folks that are interested in learning a little bit more about the basics of weather and meteorology.
Yeah. Hey, David, Jeff Habby's website is theweatherprediction.com, theweatherprediction.com.
Theweatherprediction.com.
Yep, that's it.
Good deal. I thought we would switch gears a little bit, guys, and just read a few little tidbits of weather-related news that I have gleaned from various sources recently. Our podcast listeners may have heard these already, but these are just some of the little facts and developments that have come out in the wake of Hurricane Katrina and some other subjects too that I find pretty interesting as we continue to dissect what went right and what went wrong in the wake aftermath of the hurricane. And I'll just read small little passages from some of these stories. In the 6 months following Hurricane Katrina, FEMA paid about $26,000 in relief funds to 10 applicants who used the names and social security numbers of Alabama prison inmates. That's according to a top official with a congressional watchdog agency. And along the same lines, the government doled out as much as $1.4 billion in bogus assistance to victims of Katrina and Rita, getting hoodwinked to pay for, get this guys, season football tickets. Some assistance went to purchasing a tropical vacation and, according to congressional investigators, even a divorce lawyer. Prison inmates, a supposed victim who used a New Orleans cemetery for a home address, and somebody who spent 70 days at a Hawaiian hotel, all were able to wrongly get taxpayer help. Federal investigators even informed Congress that one man apparently used FEMA assistance money for a sex change operation. And then along other lines, State Farm acted recklessly and with malice in handling insurance claims from dozens of families whose homes were damaged when a wave of tornadoes, including the strongest in recorded history, swept through Oklahoma. That was back in 1999. That's the decision of a jury. The verdict delivered millions to the lead plaintiffs. And here's what's interesting. Could have repercussions in the Gulf Coast states, where residents are alleging that State Farm acted in bad faith when using engineering firms to assess damages after Hurricane Katrina destroyed thousands of homes and businesses. A lot of suits and complaints about that, especially out of Mississippi, as I understand. And finally, scientists have an independent obligation to respect and present the truth as they see it. That, according to Al Gore, who asserts that in his film An Inconvenient Truth. Well, with that outlook in mind, what do world climate experts actually think about the science of his movie? I thought this was interesting. Bob Carter is a professor with the Marine Geophysical Laboratory at James Cook University. He gives what's a surprising assessment. Quote, Gore's circumstantial arguments are so weak that they are pathetic. It is simply incredible that they and his film are commanding public attention. End quote. So a few little tidbits there. Anything stand out at you guys you might want to respond to?
Yeah, like what Jay Leno said the other night, David, he said that the movie should have been called An Inconvenient Rash.
He's catching a little bit of criticism about that flick, I do believe.
And all five people that have seen it probably agree, too.
I think it's coming to Birmingham sometime soon. I don't think I'll be the first in line for it, but anyway. It's just a few little tidbits I pulled out of the news about weather, and I have been interested in, I don't want to make this a soapbox, but I am really amazed at the growing nonstop media hype about global warming. And it's almost getting to the point where I'm not going to be surprised at some new malady that is attributed to global warming. It seems like when I pull up certain news websites, I see new issues and new problems that all are given a connection to global warming. Do you guys see that, or am I out here on a limb?
Like fungus toenails and stuff like that?
It's unbelievable.
Well, I tell you what was really, this is the ultimate. One of the meteorologists in our circles posted on, in our instant messaging the other day, a link to an ABC News site on the main ABC News webpage that said, send us pictures and tell us examples of the effects of global warming in your backyard. Like people are going to run out and, say that the overgrowth of crabgrass or something is because of global warming.
Well,
it's almost become hysterical.
It is, but I do wonder how many people are genuinely just getting totally confused about this who do have concerns about the environment, but, really wonder, is this really true? I'm looking at a website, ABC News, in fact, from June 24th, that draws a connection between record drought that's been happening in parts of Arizona and the West, and then all the flash flooding that's happened further east. And I'm not going to read the article, but the bottom line is they quote somebody who connects it with global warming because of increases in the water vapor in the atmosphere. So I just, I cannot help but think that there's going to be a time, I don't know how soon or how far down the road, that we will look back at some of this coverage and go, what were we thinking?
Well, I have to think we need to remember, that Mother Nature is a very resilient system, and you know, I think that we're sort of vain to think that we could knock it completely off kilter. You know, even if we are causing, you know, the warming that's going on right now, nature's got feedbacks that are going to kick in and keep the system in balance, and I think we'll see that, you know, as we go through. I've got a ton of books in here from the 1970s that say, you know, we were going into an ice age back then, and of course, you know, all those things look pretty silly now.
Well, I just I think you're right, but I am just amazed that some of the views that are being taken in some of this, it's become such a political and financial issue, and we are going to be hearing more about this. I'm not trying to build this into the soapbox issue for Weather Brains, but it is inevitable because more and more people are becoming involved in this and have something to say about it on one side or the other. What I think is unfortunate is that there probably is a large amount of misinformation floating around out there, so it makes it harder to really try to get a clean and unbiased understanding of what's happening, what's going on.
I think it's good that we've got such a focus on the environment, because I think that's critical. I think you go back and look at some of the things that happened in the 60s and 70s, the smog incidents and things like those are mostly gone now. So I think we are much more environmentally conscious, and I'm very, very glad of that. And you know, I applaud everyone who focuses on the environment, because it is the only one we got, and I know we've got to take care of it.
Sure do.
But David, you're right. It almost goes to hysterics now in some forms, the approach that people take on the issue.
And I guess the best advice is just don't believe every single thing you hear and read.
And do your own research.
Right.
You know, that's
right.
What drives me crazy. Stop and go and get objective research and understand, you know, the source where you're getting it from. You know, a lot of stuff comes from the right, a lot of stuff comes from the left, and that stuff
right. You
got to discount. It's the stuff that's coming from the real peer-reviewed scientists that you got to pay attention to.
Absolutely. If you'd like to contact us here at Weather Brains, you can do it a couple of ways. If you choose to pick up the phone and make a call to our voicemail, you can certainly do that. The number is area code 206-339-5482. Again, 206-339-5482. If you'd like to send an email in our direction, address it to question@weatherbrains.com. We'd love to hear from you. A reminder that the opinions you hear expressed here on Weather Brains are not necessarily those of ABC 3340. That's going to take care of it for this time. We do thank you for listening. On behalf of Bill Murray and J.B. Elliott, I'm David Black. We will see you next time. Weather Brains is copyright 2006. All rights reserved. Adios. All right, guys. Thank you all.
Pretty good.
Well, I appreciate that. I thought it was interesting. Had fun.
That was fun.
We managed to keep ourselves relatively well-behaved, too. I thought that was pretty impressive. Okay. JB kept us under control.